Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls, questions with Adam Bly about exorcisms, demons, and also your stories. Perhaps these things have happened to you. And welcome back to Coast. Adam Bly with us here as we talk about exorcisms, and of course, we'll get to your calls. How do you certify a priest, Adam, that they've completed the course or they're ready to do what they have to do?
Well, there's no real certification. It's more about them attending a few conferences and then being available to them for a couple years at least to be with them, have somebody experienced with them. But even after 2 or 5 years of doing this, you're still going to have times where you have to pick up the phone and call somebody and bounce stuff off them and get some ideas. So there's really no, you know, end point with learning.
And you're getting younger people now, younger priests into this?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yes. Yeah, we are. We are. Things are improving.
What's fueling that? Youth movement.
I think I'm seeing that a lot of the guys, the younger priests that I've seen over recent years, they're just really spiritual. They're really faith-filled. They're interested in the full spectrum of priesthood, which includes this work that Jesus demonstrated and told us to go do. And they're just more open to the supernatural element of life and of their priesthood, I think. There's older priests that are too. I'm not saying that they're not, but I think as a trend, the younger guys are just really, they're really on fire for working for God, and this is part of it.
All right, to the phones now we go. We go to David in North Dakota to get things started. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I got a story, and then I want to like a comment.
Okay, sure.
I was in Minnesota on a recruiting trip, and we're at a party out in the middle of nowhere. And it was Halloween night, and I'd been hanging out with these three girls dressed in witches, and somewhere along the line we came across the Ouija board. We were sitting there playing it. They got mad at me because they said I moved it or whatever, which, by the way, I don't think I did, but that's where it gets interesting now. While they're flipping out on me, this guy comes up, and he's yelling, "Sasha, Sasha," and he picks up, we were using that glass for the thingamabob or whatever, and he picks that up and throws it into the wall real bad, and he tears his shirt off, and he grabs the board, and he's hugging it. He heads for the door, and I'm kind of upset about the glass throwing thing, so I was going to go explain it to him, but anyways, I get out the door, and he's on a dead sprint into the woods. You know, there's no path or anything. He just takes off right in there, and I figure at bare minimum he had to be all scratched up or cut up, and if he didn't run right into a tree. And then, but I never did see him again that night, and I was just wondering what you guys thought of that.
Where do you think he came from? Do you think he was a demon or just some whack job? Who was he?
I think it was a guy that lived there that is probably his board or whatever.
Okay, but yeah. You want us to react to what? Him running into the woods?
Just whether he was possessed or not, or what would make him act that way, because, you know,
I would say, Adam, he's nuts. What do you think?
Yeah, I would go with your clinical diagnosis there, George. Some people will name their devices that they use for divination. So, you know, he may have named it and was very possessive of it. But honestly, that sounds more just like a person being really nutty about it.
Yeah, so we're going to put him in that category, David, that he's whacked out. But did you have another question?
No, that was it.
That was it. Okay, thanks, Dave. And I would guess, Adam, that if you look at 10 cases, 10 episodes, 8 of them probably are explainable. What do you think?
Yeah, at least. Sure.
It's like UFO cases and stuff. Most of them are natural. But you've got that 1% or 2% that something could be happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Catherine is in Antelope, California now on the wild card line. Hello, Catherine. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm so excited. I've been listening forever, and
well,
I love you, George.
Thank you.
Great. And I have this very strange question that just came to me.
Okay.
And I had to ask it. And I was wondering if it's possible for a group to be possessed as such, for example, ISIS.
Interesting. What do you think, Adam?
No. No, I don't think a group could be possessed. I think it's an individual thing, and it's about human free will. So an individual would have to make a choice, and then God would allow those choices to form a relationship with the demon. Now, I'm not gonna touch that and make judgments about, you know, any connection between ISIS and demons. But to answer your question about groups, I don't think so. Now, there have been cases where multiple people are possessed. For instance, there are some real satanic covens. I don't mean the kind of public publicity stunt Satanists, but, you know, real hardcore family-based stuff where they're raised in it, where multiple people are possessed. But in those situations, it's because they've all engaged in those choices.
Yet, can one demon convince a group to do things?
Yes, I think so, especially if the group is involved in worshiping these things or communicating with them. So one person could have a strong connection with it, and then if everybody's kind of adoring and giving honor to that person, you know, through them the demon can influence. I mean, really, George, this is kind of what the point is for them, usually. There's a lot of people out there that are possessed or under their influence that aren't seeking help or treatment. They want to be possessed, and they're basically instruments for hell to have influence in the world. So, you know, there's people where there's no internal conflict. Malachi Martin, he would call it perfect possession. He's talked about it on Coast to Coast when he did those interviews years ago. And that's where there's the person wants it. They want to serve these things. And so you don't see any of these signs of distress, the yelling and screaming and manifestations, because it's a cooperative thing. So usually, you know, that would be their, I think, their goal, to influence the world through people they have sway over. Now, there's lots of people they want to just destroy them, too. There's some scary things going on.
Let's go out to Lakeland, Florida. Gordon's with us now on Coast to Coast. Gordon, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
George, Brother Blythe, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Much of what you said sounds right, but there's one or two things I want to ask you about. I don't mean any offense. In the Bible days, it says, these signs shall follow them that believe. Anyone that believes, in the Bible days, they didn't use any water or crucifixes, and with a rare exception of Paul's garment that he passed along. And then usually they healed him the first time out, except that one time Jesus needed two tries. And if I could squeeze a second question in, just how does fasting and prayer play a role? I know it works, but I mean, that I know that I'm squeezing two questions in, but the fasting and prayer one fascinates me. So do you understand the depth of my question?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't offended you, have I? I hope certainly not most of what you
said. No, I don't think you're offended. Adam, are you?
No, not at all. So this is basically the difference between the Protestant approach and the Catholic approach. So, you know, the Catholic Church, one of the three legs of the Catholic Church is tradition. And so we saw this in the ancient church, in the early church, George, where traditions and methods of doing things evolved over time. And as the church was kind of standardized, like, you know, the Council of Trent and other early councils where they sat down and tried to hash things out and figure out how to do things. And so the Catholic Church simply says that that evolution of tradition and adapting to the world as the world changes to some extent, like what Vatican II was about, is kind of part of the life of the church, and that the Holy Spirit guides that process. And that's why you'll see things added in, like using a crucifix, which, if you think about it, for most of those stories in the Bible, Jesus was still alive. He hadn't been crucified yet. So it wouldn't make sense for somebody to pull out a crucifix. They would say, why do you have that Roman torture device there? What are you doing with that? It wouldn't make sense yet. And later it did. Water appears in scriptures in many places as a reference to life and healing. the Pools of Bethesda, Jesus referencing himself as being the living water that brings life. So there's a lot of symbolism with water, but the main symbolism that we connect with at exorcism is a reminder of the baptismal water. And so it is to remind the person spiritually of their baptism into union with God and into their childhood under God. So there's good reasons those things are there. And then
fasting and prayer.
Fasting and prayer. So that reference, there was one time when they came back and they said, hey, this one case is really difficult. And he said, this type only comes out with fasting and prayer. So basically what he was saying is there's some cases that are more difficult and you're going to have to offer more spiritually for that person than just getting together and praying. You're going to have to offer up additional prayer to God in your downtime between sessions. And that involves fasting, and it often did in the ancient world. When you really wanted to pray seriously, you would fast and you would pray. And so it was a reference to sometimes God, you know, needs or requires more prayer beyond just the session that you're in. And of course, every exorcist I know fasts and prays in preparation for exorcisms.
Nita is in Florida. Hi, Nita. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering, what is your opinion on as far as children that are mediums? Do you think that is a form of possession or something demonic? And some people see it as a gift when they're a medium. And I know that's tampering with things that you said is evil. Or I don't understand, because you see children that communicate with people that have passed. Is that all demonic or that's possessed?
Well, I have dealt with one case that's exactly what you're talking about. And the person actually was on TV on one of these TV shows about kids that have supposed psychic gifts and whatnot. And they turned out to be possessed. And when they fully manifested, actually, the night that the TV show aired, where their episode that they were in and everybody was sitting around watching it excited to see that, and they fully manifested and went under during that episode. They were later freed, and they're free and clear, and they're good now, and all their psychic stuff is gone. So I'm not going to say that 100% of those cases are demonic. I think the vast majority of them are. I think there are rare people in the history of the world that have special gifts, but and those can be from God, but I don't think, to be clear, in my experience, in thinking about it and what I've seen, I don't think that includes talking to dead people. From my experience, it's very clear that dead people only ask us to pray for them, and that's it. There's no dialogue, there's no back and forth, there's no sharing information. Anything that wants to have a conversation, that's not a dead person.
But some people, some children who have these what we think are imaginary friends really don't, but they're not possessed. Are they not?
No. I think that's a whole different thing, George. I think that's just, you know, some kids don't have as many playmates, or we have stronger imaginations when we're little. Yeah, I think that's a whole different thing.
So what can people do to stay safe, to buffer themselves from these demons?
Well, you know, we've done part of it tonight, and that is to get educated on the rules of the spiritual world. The spiritual world's very legalistic. It's not a random thing where you're walking down the street and then you just fall over and you're in trouble. If you learn what the rules are, and those are stay in relationship with your creator, not the created things, which include these other spirits, and do your best within your religion, whatever your spiritual system is, to, you know, grow close to God. Pray and ask God to help you, and learn the tricks the demons use. They offer, you know, power. They offer, you know, favors.
Do they give them to you, or they trick you?
They trick you with a sham of what they're offering.
The old trick.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the things we've talked about tonight illuminate that. We've talked about some of the other tricks that they use in the other times we've talked, George, and people can look at those archives, I think, listen to them. You know, just get educated. That's the most important thing. If you're Catholic, stay close to the sacraments. confession does more damage than exorcism by far.
Really? Why?
Oh my goodness. Confession is stopping 1,000 problems before they get that far. Exorcism, think of it this way, George. Exorcism is when you've walked up to the edge of the cliff and you're teetering and you're about to fall and somebody shoots a hand out and grabs you before you fall off the cliff. That's what exorcism is. It's a last-ditch effort. Confession is like stopping 1,000 people as they walk towards the cliff. It's far more important.
Let's go to Alan in the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. Alan, go ahead.
That's a great show.
Thanks.
Just a twofold question. How many demons can possess an individual at any one time, and where do the demons go after they're exorcised? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay. How many and where?
Okay, so it's not about how many. It's about having rights to the body. So let's say I sublet my apartment to you for the summer, and I go away.
One family.
And you have the keys to the apartment. You can move as many people as you want to into that apartment. You can swap them, have them come and go every day. That's what possession is. Hell has the keys to that body. They have rights to that body. So they will swap in different spirits at different times depending on the situation. So it's really irrelevant to say, oh, there's three here. Well, 5 minutes later, there could be 40. It doesn't matter. It's when the rights are removed that's important, when you take the keys back. What was the other question, George? Sorry.
You know, I've lost my notes because we're quickly running out of time here. But
where do they go? They go back to Satan. They're punished for their failure, and then they're reassigned.
Do they get reprocessed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a military organization, so they're like soldiers. They may get assigned to a person. They may work on that person for an entire lifetime, or they may just work on them during their possession. When they fail, other demons have told us at subsequent exorcisms that so-and-so is being tortured for their failure. You know, you're dealing with me now. So we've seen evidence of this multiple times.
Are they reprocessed like souls?
No, they just go back to their boss. You know, 9 choirs of angels, so there's 9 ranks of angels. Some fell from all 9 ranks, so you get 9 ranks in hell. So think of it like a pyramid organization. They go back to their boss. They may be tortured by Satan himself, who knows. But they're basically tortured, and then they're reassigned to another job.
Well, you've...
So, for instance, like, we could meet the same demon in multiple cases over time. I've met the same one at the higher level, at the higher rank, one notch under Satan. There's one in particular that tends to be involved in a lot of possessions, and, you know, I've met him, who knows, 12 times in different cases across the country.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, where we send you information all the time to keep up on the program and things that are happening all around the planet. But we'll come back. Those of you on hold, just stay right there on Coast to Coast AM. Well, will you get chipped if they ask you to? They'll put it in your hand. Catherine Albrecht joins us on our next Coast to Coast show to talk about that, followed by Open Lines. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Adam Bly. It's our final segment. His website, religiousdemonology.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Adam, did you ever think you would be in this field?
No, George, I certainly didn't. It's not really a field. You know, there's no degrees to get. There's no career path with this. It's something that I was drawn into, and, you know, there's a great need here, and I'm happy to try to be helpful. But it's not a career, so to speak. And
I mean, do you get paid to do this?
Well, for the last 10 years, it's been voluntary. It's only in the last year and a half that I've started working for the Pittsburgh Diocese. And so, yes, now I have both an administrative job and on a committee addressing all the demonic cases in our diocese. I also consult, you know, for free with many other dioceses across the country where there's priests that have been involved in training.
Well, that's great. You're not going to get rich doing this.
No.
You're not doing it for that.
No, and you have to give up a lot. You really can't have a family. No wife, no girlfriend, no pets.
No, the minute you tell them what you do, they kind of freak, don't they?
Well, and also the demons will attack people close to you seeking revenge if they can get access to them.
So unless you want to date a witch or something, you never know. Huh?
No, I don't.
No, I know that. That is, it is. It's almost like taking a vow, isn't it?
It amounts to the same thing, yeah.
Let's go to the final calls here for us. We got Brenda in Texas on the wild card line. Hey, Brenda, go ahead.
Yes, George. I need to tell just a short story for my question to make sense.
All right.
My son was out Sunday night, yard. It was 11 p.m., and he started hearing this humming sound, and he knew the neighbor's house was too far away for it to be the radio. And he kept listening. It kept coming closer and closer to the woods. And I said, when it got, you know, it wasn't far away, the dog stood up and started listening and looking down toward where it was coming. And he said he knew then that this wasn't in his mind. It was really happening. And he said that when the dog started there, you know, just a few seconds, started growling and the hairs on the back of his neck standing up straight. And my son had a light on his head, the reason he knew all this was going on with the dog. And he said he knew then that it was time to turn and run. So he turned and ran to the house and got up on the porch and got in. Now then, we live in an area where Sasquatches are living and they prove. We know that. But my question is it possible for the Sasquatch to be demon-possessed? Because he believed if he'd have stayed there, that thing was coming at him.
All right. That's a well-worth question. So, Adam, she's got Bigfoot running all over the place. Can they be possessed by a demon? Interesting question. Never heard that one.
Never heard that one. That's a new one. Personally, I would assume Bigfoot doesn't exist because there would have been signs of them found by now, documented by anthropologists. But let's talk about any animal, and that'll address this question. We have seen that animals can be possessed. Usually demons don't bother doing this unless it's part of tormenting a person. So they may go into their pets, cause the pets to kill themselves or attack people or do other distracting things. So yes, animals can be dominated by them much more easily than a person could, probably because there's a lack of free will and all of that. So if there was a Bigfoot running around and if it was an animal level intelligence, then it probably could be.
Do animals sense demons better than humans?
They do seem to, yes. Some are more acute to it than others. I've even heard stories of deliverance teams using dogs that were particularly sensitive as to be able to tell when a person is delivered and freed of a spirit they're praying against, and they'll see the dog chase it out of the room even though there's nothing there. So I've not seen that myself, but I've heard stories of it. I've seen plenty of animals that people tell me, you know, react to these things.
Let's go to Annette in Dayton, Ohio, wild card line. Hi, Annette, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I got a real strange experience. I've had kind of paranormal things all my life, and I never tried to do the...
I'm going to have Tom check with you on that phone because you keep on dropping in and out. Tom in Baltimore, Maryland, welcome to the show. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good show. I wanted to ask the guest, George, with all of his past information, where did he get it from? Like you asked him about school. It reminds me of a place where I've heard this before, but where did you get it from, sir?
Experience and direct mentorship under exorcists.
Other teachers, no doubt, Adam.
Yeah, the exorcism ministry is passed down through a verbal tradition for the most part. Most of the information is not put in books. So, yeah, it's direct training for the most part and experience.
What if you were trained by someone who just didn't understand what they were doing? Would that have rubbed off on you? I guess you were lucky you had good teachers.
Yeah. I mean, things wouldn't go well, so you would quickly figure out things are not working, and you would start seeking out new information. Because, you know, this isn't a passive thing that we're dealing with. It's an active opponent. And if you don't understand the rules of engagement and how they operate, you're not going to be effective against them, and you're going to become the next case. Not that you'll be possessed, but they'll mess with you also.
Tom tells me Annette's phone is working now. Let's go back to Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead, Annette.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, like, I didn't put the things together until I read Malachi's Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil.
Right.
Okay, like, I was only 12 and a half. Well, just before that, we were moving from Salt Lake City, and it was snow, and we had a stay in this nice hotel. My brother and I had a suite, and my parents had a suite. Well, I woke up to looking at a beam of light. I don't think it was an alien. I think it was a real angel, because it was so bright you could bite the sun, but you could look straight at it. Seemed to have a facial light, but wasn't distinctive. And it had like an open robe, and all this light was coming out of it. And then, you know, I didn't think, I know I was awake. I looked at my brother, why isn't he awake looking at this? And then I looked back, and it was still there, and it just was there.
It,
I didn't get any.
Doesn't sound like a demon, though, does it, Adam?
No, it doesn't. It was either a waking dream or possibly an angel, yeah.
Do demons have shapes?
No, they pretend to take shapes. So in their raw form, they look like a rolling black smoke that you cannot see through and does not dissipate. But they're often just invisible and give off a horrible odor. But they will take the shape of whatever will make you drop your guard. So the big tip for people, if they're pretending to be a human soul, there'll be something deformed or missing. They won't be a perfectly complete human. They'll often be hiding their eyes or part of their bodies deformed or missing, and that's a clue that it's something pretending to be a person.
My gosh. What's the longest case of a possessed person that you've experienced or heard about?
It's one that I've been working on from the beginning. Oh, gosh, 22 years it's been going, I
of
think.
Possession?
Yeah.
My gosh. Constant?
Yes. Yeah, the person's been freed a couple times over the years for a day or so at a time.
Their life must be a living hell.
Yeah, the cases end in one of three ways, George. Freedom, death, or a truce.
Suicide, so, right? Sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
People can't take it anymore. But this person's kind of coming to terms with it in the sense that they're just have lived with it for so long, they're just kind of toughing it out.
On the international line, Russell is with us from Vancouver, Canada. Russell, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Really enjoying the show so far tonight. I wanted to tell a quick story from my younger days when we played a little bit with a game called the Psychic Circle, which is pretty much a ripoff of a Ouija board, same kind of idea with the board that has the letters and all that on there, little glass piece so everyone can push that around. And I think it was the summer of 2002, and me and my friends were playing with this game. One of my friend's little sisters brought it in. And so we're playing in the top room of this house, and we started asking questions about our friends and the people who were in the room, and then someone decided to ask if anybody was in the room with us in a spirit form. And at that exact moment, the door to the room started shaking violently, and it was just like it was like something out of a movie or something like that. So everyone was freaked out. So then we continued to play anyways once it went down. And then they started asking questions about me. And a few of the things that the board said about me was, one, that I had lived multiple lives, I think like 1,800 different lives, and that over the course of my existence, I had been bonded with a demon. And so that was, you know, terrifying in itself to hear this random board game tell me. So after all that, after the demon comment, we decided it was time to stop playing the game. And so we all went downstairs, and I was the only one out of the group that went to church. I grew up as a Latter-day Saint. And so everyone there asked me to say a prayer. So I said a prayer to try and make everyone feel better. So then I went home, and I couldn't sleep. I was sitting in bed in my room. I woke up. I was reading the Bible. And then I finally went and woke up my dad, and I said, I was playing with a Ouija board. It said I'm possessed. I'd love for you to give me a blessing. So he did that. Now, I felt better afterwards. My question is, after telling you this story, is that do I need to be concerned about X still being possessed as a result of this? There's just a few things that I do that would be a point of being possessed. I write in my sleep left-handed. I was with a girl a few years ago, and she woke up in the middle of the night, and I was sitting up straight in bed, staring to the foot of the bed, and she said, "What are you doing, Russ?" And I said, "Why are you staring at us? Why are you standing there staring at us?" And then I just laid down and went back to sleep. So, you know, do I have to be concerned about anything?
No. So that story is a great example. I'll say this quickly because I know we're running out of time. So the invitation when you guys were playing, when you said, is there any spirit here in the room? And then that was an invitation where you gave permission for something to start manifesting. That's why it shook the door to create fear. When it saw that that rattled everybody, you guys continued to talk to it. And then what it did is it picked on the one person in the room that was more Christian and church-going to target them because it wants to separate the people, you know, whoever it figures is closest to God, it wants to separate them from God because that's what their goal is. So that's why it picked on you and started telling you lies about being possessed in a previous life, which would have, one, it doesn't work that way, and it would have no bearing on your life now. And the final point is what you're describing is not possession, it's a sleep disorder. So you're having hypnagogic hallucinations or hypnopompic right. hallucinations, which is a transitory sleep disorder. Talk to your medical doctor about it. There are treatments for it. It's very common. It's not really a problem. You can just live with it.
Adam, how do these demons know where to go and who to go after?
They watch us our whole lives. You know, it's their job to tempt us. They're always around us. There's holy angels around us. There's fallen angels around us. They keep tabs on us.
I mean, do they take their marching orders from Lucifer?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. So, you know, don't be fearful about that. Don't think, oh, you know, suddenly now I need to be scared because there's this thing creeping around. That's their job. They've always been there. They've watched mankind. It's their job to tempt us, but they're limited creatures. They're all on a leash, and God has the leash. So they're just doing their job. You don't need to be fearful. There's plenty more holy angels around and the presence of the Creator over the whole situation. But, yeah, basically they get their marching orders. It's a military organization.
We go to Tom in the Bronx, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
And your guest. I'd like to say this. In Mexico, when you go back to the conquistadors, there's a town that of indigenous people that they would never go into. And what happened was that there is a tapeworm called the breeder worm. And the breeder worm goes into concert with the body. It doesn't destroy the human bodies. And it throws off eggs in the body system. Anybody that would eat a meal in this particular town would wind up with the killer worms the killer worms that kill people, the tapeworms. This story over here is true, and this type of situation adds to the story about demons and devils and everything. People not understanding of the medical's angle to this. Have you ever heard of this town?
No, I've not. That's the first time I'm hearing about that.
Not a town you want to visit.
No, I've always heard rumors about South America in terms of, you know, different health issues you can have about the water, because if your body's not used to it, you can be more susceptible, but I've not heard of that one.
As we wrap up here, Adam, for people who want more information on some of the things you do, it's available to them through your website?
Yeah, I have all the basic questions that people have, I think, are covered there. So they could go to religiousdemonology.com, and there's a big Q&A section and some articles that try to explain these things.
Those of you on hold, I'm sorry we have run out of time, especially you, Leslie, first-time caller from Indiana. But you can try. We've got open lines tomorrow night, and we'll have some more open lines on Friday. Adam, as for you, thank you so much. So leaving, what's the greatest advice you can give to people so they don't get possessed?
Is stay close to God, seek God in your life. If you're having trouble finding God, pray and say, God, I'm having trouble finding you. Please help me and give me the grace to move towards you. Don't fear the devil. Don't fear the demons. Just stay focused on the positive.
All right, my friend. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate you being on the program.
Sure, George. Nice to talk to you.
Adam Bly teaches priests about exorcisms. He's been doing it for 10 years. What an amazing, amazing position to have. Well, stick with us all week long. We've got some great programs for you on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.